This podcast is presented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, safer, healthier people.
Global changes in atmospheric chemistry, meteorology, ecology, and other dimensions of our world together comprise perhaps the greatest environmental health challenge. But basically, we've got ultraviolet and infrared radiation arriving from the sun. It comes through the blanket of gases that envelops the Earth, much as sunlight comes through the glass walls of a greenhouse. It warms the Earth, and then as some of that energy is about to be reflected back into space, it is retained by the layer of greenhouse gases. That layer, of course, has gotten thicker over the last 100 or 150 years. Taking a long view of things, we have ice core data that goes back several hundred thousand years. You can see that there is natural fluctuation, but we have never in the history of this record seen CO2 levels that exceed 280 or 300. We're now up to 380 and rising, so this is absolutely unprecedented in the history of the Earth. In association with those rising CO2 levels and levels of other greenhouse gases, we're seeing temperatures rise. We continue to see average warming across the face of the globe. That has led to changes in the world. We're living in a different world than our great-grandparents did. Rising temperatures, more severe weather events, loss of polar ice cover, ecological damage, glacier loss, sea level rise, floods, and that's not a complete list. Where will this be going in coming decades? What does the future hold in store? We know that carbon dioxide levels are continuing to rise. Even if we were to stabilize our emissions of CO2 levels and other greenhouse gases today, levels would continue to rise because there's a lot of momentum in the system. There are various projections for how high carbon dioxide is going to go and various predictions of what we ought to aim for as a ceiling beyond which we shouldn't go if we are to avoid irreversible and deadly changes to the Earth's ecosystem. We also expect temperature to continue to rise, and again, there's uncertainty around how much the temperature will rise, but several degrees is a midpoint estimate, and that appears to be something that is, to some extent, destined at this point. So we have a number of predictable changes, a number of unpredictable potential changes, and all of that gives us a number of cautions in many ways. The ones that we think about most as public health people are those that pertain to human health. There's a range of potential health effects from climate change, the direct effects of heat causing morbidity and mortality, the effects of storms and coastal flooding. We're very familiar with what severe storms do to public health. Coastal flooding could displace large populations, causing tremendous trauma and public health threats. Changes in ecosystems lead to changes in vector biology, causing infectious disease risks. Some air pollutants, especially ozone, are created at higher levels, at higher temperatures, so that warmer temperatures may cause worse problems with air pollution. Changes in the ecosystem will lead to changes in how we produce our food and could compromise the food supply for some of the most vulnerable among us. The European heat wave was a good example of the kinds of things that could occur with climate change. There were 29 to 30,000 confirmed deaths across Europe, and those are only from those countries that reported for which they could confirm data, so the death toll was probably higher than that. One of the public health responses is to anticipate and to put heat wave plans into place. The urban heat island is a phenomenon that describes that cities are warmer than the surrounding countryside because of the loss of trees leading to the loss of evapotranspiration, and because of the construction of dark surfaces that absorb heat and re-radiate that heat during the evenings when the cities would otherwise cool down. As we build bigger and bigger cities, as we become more and more an urban species, then the combined effects of urbanization and climate change will lead to more heat effects in cities. Infectious diseases are a huge topic. If tropical climates expand their range, then tropical diseases will expand their range. There's evidence now that this is happening already, both in terms of geographic spread and in terms of spread to higher altitudes in places already at risk of infectious diseases. Climate change and food, a very complex set of relationships. As places get warmer, as rainfall patterns vary, some places becoming wetter, some places becoming drier, as some pests become more prevalent, then many of the standard forms of agricultural production that we know may be expected to change. It may be that the grain basket of the United States moves up toward the Yukon Territory in Manitoba. We do have good data on the impact of warmer weather and higher CO2 levels on the growth rates of various food plants. There's a lot of uncertainty, but what you can see here is that in most cases, we expect grain yields to decline. Most of the plants that we now know and on which we rely have evolved or been evolved by us in the context of a particular climate. And if that climate changes, plant growth may be impaired. It's especially notable that the poorest and most at-risk regions of the world are the ones that depend on the grains that are most at risk of declining production under climate change scenarios. We have to worry greatly about those who are most at risk. Mental health. We really do need to ask about the impact of this much gloomy news on all of us, on our children who need and deserve the prospect of a sustainable and safe world in which to grow up. This is very gloomy stuff. It's hard to talk about all this stuff. How do we think about it? In one sense, we're called on to think about the unthinkable. We've had to do that before. It was unthinkable until September 2001 that this sort of an act would occur on our soil. But we had to grapple with it, and we did. We took it on. We've taken a number of steps to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. It changed life for many of us, but it showed us that we have the ability to take on the unthinkable and to tackle very big problems. We can use the precautionary principle, something with which we're very familiar in environmental health and in public health more generally. Do we know all of the details of climate change? No, we certainly don't. Do we know how fast it will occur or how serious the problems will be? No, we don't. But given credible indications that there is a danger there, we need to act in order to protect people from that danger. This is standard public health practice. We do it in emergency rooms every day, and we can use this thinking to help us move forward on climate change. What should we do in the public health context? Adaptation is an approach that we use in public health. It involves anticipating things that will be occurring or are occurring now and taking steps to cope with them, to minimize the harm done to people. This is what we call preparedness. Adaptive mechanisms for climate change range widely. More dikes, dams, and levees, relocating people who are in high-risk areas, changing agricultural practices to assure a supply of food, developing heat wave plans for cities that are at risk of heat waves so that those who are most vulnerable, and we know who they are and where they are, can be approached and rescued if a heat wave should occur. Vector-borne disease control programs, assuring that physicians and nurses in areas at risk of infectious diseases are ready and prepared, can diagnose diseases such as malaria and dengue, and can act rapidly to control them. Changes in food handling, and many, many more. There's a wide range of public health actions that we can take and that we need to be taking. The things we have to do in response to climate change are things that we have to do as environmental public health professionals generally, and they will enrich our work and improve the results that we get across the board. Leadership requires courage, courage to deliver difficult messages, courage to get outside your comfort zone. If you know environmental public health and you don't know climatology or you don't know infectious disease ecology, you need to tackle those topics, and that takes courage.
To access the most accurate and relevant health information that affects you, your family, and your community, please visit www.cdc.gov.